I'm Adam Rappaport. Welcome back to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. We're coming to you live, or at least live-ish, from the Ace Hotel in Portland. We're here for our annual Feast Portland Food Festival. And we are being joined today by Chris Cosentino from Coxcomb Restaurant and Boccolone Cured Meats. What do we call it, Chris? What do we call
Boccolone? Fancy term.
Fancy term. And Chris Shepherd from Underbelly in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the table, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, man. It's great to be here.
I think we're all a little crusty. We had some fun last night, as one does at food festivals. But
for sure.
Yeah, we're up and at them at like 11-ish in the morning here.
It's pretty early.
It's early. Yeah, early-ish.
Right. Really? Now.
Yeah.
You think that's early?
You're like a cyclist, right, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was up this morning like 7:30.
Did you do anything exercise-related or?
I walked around.
That's good.
I didn't bring my bike. This is the first year of Feast that I have not brought my bike.
Are you one of those guys who owns multiple bikes and has them hanging in your garage and stuff?
Yes.
Yes. This is a big cycling town, correct?
Huge cycling town. I mean, you've got the best bike lanes. You've got cycling, road cycling, mountain biking. Everything's right here.
So on a morning like this, and we will get to food. Don't worry about it, guys. How long does it take to get out of the city and into those sort of like car
commercial
areas? No time
at all. You can ride from here to Sovey Island and do the Sovey Island loop, which is where a lot of the farms are here. So as you're riding around Sovey Island, you can see a ton of farms that supply a lot of these restaurants in town, and you loop in and loop out.
Cool. Well, I'm going to segue to, farms. You mentioned farms. And I think what's interesting about you two guys as chefs is that you've sort of gained a reputation for a love of meat, of butchery, of whole animal butchery, and really sort of getting to know the source of where your proteins are coming from. And I'm just curious how each of you sort of got on that track, and Chris Shepherd, how did you become meat guy of Houston?
You know, it was something to be able to do, you know. It was something that was intangible that I could see and do and work with farmers, because 8 years ago it wasn't really that possible. But then
meanwhile, you would just have to order from a purveyor and you got what you got, sort of thing.
Yeah, and then you start working with farmers, and then you start buying the entire animal, and you just start working it that way, and then they were like, oh, well, there's a venue for it. And then others start to do it, and it starts to grow.
But there needs to be a demand for that also, right? If you're going to get whole animals into your restaurant, you have to be able to sell the whole animal, Chris. Is that challenging for you, Chris, someone who became an awful, quote-unquote, guy?
You know, I think once you start down that path, it's you really have to commit. You know, and I think, you know, whether it's a whole lamb, a whole pig, I mean, I've never been able to get in a whole steer. You have space for it.
Every week?
Wow. Yeah, well, everything's a little bit bigger in Texas.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, those are big in. What's an average weight for you on one of those?
850 to 1,000 pounds.
And you have a rail, you roll them in and break down on, or do you have them split?
No, they bring them in quarters.
Okay, that's good.
What if those shepherds just like, get a whole steer in? Yeah.
Well, that was the holy grail for us. That was, for me, it was like goats, lambs, pigs. We do that all the time, but it was the respect of a cow that I think it's lost a lot of times. And before we built the restaurant, I talked to one of my purveyors, and I was like, so if I want to buy the entire cow, how is that possible? And he was like, well, I get you things in boxes. I get you ribeyes and strips. And I was like, but what about all the other cuts? And he was like, does that really matter? And I was like, we're done.
Yeah.
It does matter.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the thing. I went back to my partners, and I was like, we're building a butcher shop in this thing. We're going to be able to do whole steer. That's it.
That's it. Hey, that's very impressive. But, you know, you guys also run a business, and you understand margins are tough at a restaurant. It's a very competitive industry. So in your both places, how much of an advantage can it be to get whole animals instead of just select cuts? But then once you have the whole animals, what do you do with all the other parts, and how do you get the customers to sign on for, I think you might have beef tartare on your menu or something. I saw. And like, who buys that? And like, you know, how do you preach the gospel to the customer?
I think at this point, I feel that Chris and I are pretty fortunate enough that people seek us out for those things.
Yeah.
And they're really looking for it, and they know that that's what we do. But I think it's really taking the whole animal, you break it down, and we kind of rotate through cuts so we can process through the animal. So it's...
What do you mean by rotate?
So say, for instance, I'll use a lamb. Mm-hmm. So we'll braise the shoulder, or we'll make, you know, merguez with trim. We'll take the hind leg, we'll seam the whole leg out, and we call it leg fillets. So I'll seam everything out, take off the sinew, and we can roast a leg fillet and slice it. So we'll do a mix. So you get a piece of braised shoulder, you get a zampini, which is a curly sausage from Puglia, and then you get a leg fillet. I'll save the racks as a whole separate thing. I'll sell a whole rack to a table as a shared item. So I keep kind of breaking it down in ways where people are like, okay, well, the cut today on this is this. It's not, we always have one particular cut all the time.
Chris, we just change the menu every night, and it's the only way for us to be able to do it, because if we get in the cow, so a steer, if it's 900 pounds, it's 22, 24 ribeyes, right? So that's butcher cut on Saturday, generally first off, and then it changes throughout service. We'll go into strips after that, and then sirloins and things like that, just depending on what it is. And it's just, for us, it's finding and utilizing ways to be able to do these things. And it's because of that, because of the cook sitting down every day at 2 o'clock, we figure out what the menu is going to be. And it's, we cook what we want to eat. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, okay, we have these pieces here. We have enough for 35, 40 orders. Boom. That goes on.
All right. We know what a strip is. We know what a ribeye is. We know leg of lamb. We know rack. What do you do with all the trimmings? Do you guys make sausages? Do you make force meat? Like what? Because obviously you have a lot of other stuff.
Well, you know, for us, we do sausage. We do pate de campagna. I mean, it's just constant. There's a million outlets for it. You know, staff meal, some days I'll do like a great chili verde for all the staff, you know, and it's just always going back to the customer in a new way. Riettes. I mean, there's a million ways to use it.
And Chris, you also embrace a lot of different cuisines that are representative of the tapestry that is Houston. How do you get creative?
Because we base it on Houston food, and you're looking at cultures that already use these kind of cuts.
And just for the listener, Houston has an incredibly diverse eating sort of like, you know, map. And I think a lot of people don't know that. They think of Houston as a big, fancy oil bank, sort of Texas town, you know.
It is that, but it's also, you know, there's a ton of Thai and a ton of Vietnamese and Indian and Mexican and Salvadorian and just all these cultures that come in together that gives us the ability to use, you know, all these different cuts to do different things, whether it be satays or stir fry or braises, you know, long cooked things. A lot of Vietnamese dishes are, you know, cheaper cuts of beef that you have to braise for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's how we utilize it.
What at each of your restaurants, what have you been surprised by that has actually sold better than you thought, that you might have been tentative to put on the menu at first and then people just go for it?
Cow's udder.
Really? I have no idea if he's joking.
No, I'm not.
No, I know he's not.
There's no... So I have a purveyor that I'm working with, Mindful Meats, absolutely amazing company. And they're working with worked animals, older animals that are working animals. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to get cow's udder because it's a very, like, it's just what Chris was saying. It's like a lot of the greatest foods are the peasant foods of the people that really had to think and put their best foot forward to work with a product that the wealthy didn't want.
Yeah.
Right. So you have now these peasant foods of cheaper cuts of meat, whether it was offals or a tough cut like a shoulder. And udder, you go to Argentina, it's grilled.
Really?
See, I've never heard this
before. It's absolutely amazing. And I think for us, you know, I'm working on the new cookbook and I've cured it to make bacon. So we just did a JBLT, a Jewish bacon, lettuce, and tomato. So it's like cow's udder bacon, which it's, the staff is excited.
So, and that's on the menu something? What do you put on the menu?
What I put on the menu is milk braised cow's udder with broccoli, rabi, and chilies.
So then, all right. So if you put something like that on the menu, what do you tell the waiters? How do you get them to sell it to the customer if the customer is curious?
And I think the first thing you do is, one, you have them taste it.
Yeah.
You know, we do a tester dish at lineup for all the front of the house, for all the cooks. Everybody tastes everything. We talk about it. Does it need more acid? Does it need a little more chili? Then it's about them understanding the flavor nuances, why it's done. There's a story behind every dish, every single dish, you know, Chris puts together has a historical element or it comes from a culture or there's reasons why the flavors were put together, right? Whether it's lime juice and a Thai chili and cilantro or rau rum or the particular udder, we take braise, chill, slice it and have, it looks like a piece of foie gras. We score it.
Wow.
And then we sear it really hard. And the inside is just beautiful, velvety, has a pillow-like texture, similar to foie gras. And we are calling it, like, you know, the servers explain it. This is like a beef foie gras. It's absolutely beautiful.
See, that's a good selling point.
I want it right now.
Yeah, when you say similar to foie gras, their ears pit.
Yeah, but it's like, it's sustainable cut that has been rejected for a very long time in this country. And Mindful Meats built a HACCP plan for it. Just so I could get the product.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Chris Shepard, what about you in terms of, is there a dish on your menu that's taken off surprisingly?
I mean, it's no cow udder, but it's for us, it's just goat.
Oh,
we go through an amazing amount of goat. 200 to 250 pounds of whole animal every week.
And are you typically braising it and stewing it?
I braise the whole thing. Yeah. We do one dish, it's braised goat, Korean rice stick called duk. and gochujang, which is our best selling dish. We'll sell 100 a night.
Oh wow.
And it's the one dish that we were like, oh, we need to put this on. I need a menu filler right now. I made this at home one night. It's great. It's very Korean. It's tteokbokki, and we'll do it this way. And it's the one thing we haven't been able to take off.
Wow.
It's
really
awesome. It's the only dish that's on the menu that will not come off the menu.
What about, all right, in terms of whole animals, you then need to hire people who know or can at least learn pretty quickly how to butcher them. How hard is that to find talented people? And the better the butcher, the less waste you have.
Mojave is my butcher. He's been with me 17 years, and he's just the guy. He's the guy.
Does he do everything, or does he have helpers?
Everything. Well, wow. he's got an assistant in the butcher shop, but he breaks when the animals come in. He's like, no problem, Poppy. Boom, and it's done.
Wow.
It's like, you know, I got three pigs, maybe six coming in this week, and he's like, no problem. And he just gets at it.
Wow. Chris, what about you?
Same thing. I have a gentleman, Hector Burgos. He's worked for me for 15 years.
Wow.
He started as a dishwasher at Encanto. And when I took over the restaurant, he said, teach me. I'll learn anything you want.
So you taught him how to butcher.
I taught him how to butcher.
Wow. And where did you learn to butcher? Because it's a serious skill, you know?
This one is, you know.
In 28 words or less.
I bullshitted my way into it.
Uh-huh.
I was a stagiaire at Chez Panisse with Christopher Lee. And he said, hey, we got some bellwether lambs. Has anybody ever butchered lamb? And I was like, oh yeah, I have. Total bullshit. He sent me down to the prep kitchen and I just followed the seams. I'm going to break it down. That was my first. And then he came down. He was like, you've never done this before. And I was like, no, I haven't. And he's like, all right, cool. But he's like, you didn't screw it up.
Yeah.
He's like, so we're going to do it together. And then he showed me how to do the lamb. And then I went and bought a veterinarian guide.
Yeah, as one does. That's of course. Awesome. Really?
It makes so much sense. It's like, how better to learn how to maximize the use of an animal from people that try to save them every day. So it shows muscle structures, striations. It shows where most of the fat lays, where all the organs lie. And it showed me the right way to do it with just following seams. And it took me a while.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
I worked for a chef that was a hunter, and he basically would he'd give me a deer and be like, I want this, I want this, I want this. And you break down the rest, give it to the staff.
This was in Texas.
Yeah. And so it was like, okay. And so late at night, you just sit down and break down. If he shot something, I'd break it down. And then it was like, okay, well, I want to learn more. So if you look at like structures of rabbits, and then it was like, I want suckling pigs. And then you just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And that was pretty much how I did it. I mean, just always studying. And then I took a couple of classes like from Austrian butchers and then just kept going at it.
Wow, that's fascinating. Shifting gears a little bit, but not really. We are, I think, at a moment in this country where we're kind of undergoing this vegetable revolution, where there's just so much amazing produce available to chefs now, and there's now chefs cooking it creatively, diners demanding it, wanting it. How do you guys incorporate sort of interesting vegetable cookery into sort of menus that meat is at its soul? How do the two work together?
I think that we're both lucky in the aspect of we live in extended growing seasons. I mean, you have a great growing season in San Francisco, and for Houston, it never gets really cold, so we always have beautiful things.
I was just at the Portland Farmers Market about a half hour ago up the hill, and it's just stunning, the amount of array of quality produce and how it's accessible to everyone now.
Yeah, I look at that and I like strawberries, and I'm like, we will start that in December.
Wow.
Our strawberry season starts late November, early December, and goes until March. And so,
really?
Yeah.
Ours starts in March, ends in November.
Yeah. And that's like crazy. Tomatoes were so fast on me.
Yeah.
We sometimes get some grief from our readers and listeners or whatever and at Bon Appetit that they're like, you guys always write for people who live on the East Coast and where summer is just, June, July, August, or, like that the growing season, you forget that the growing season is different everywhere in the country based on where you are.
And I think when you're having farmers that are putting their best into something, you owe it to them to give it your best and make sure that their vegetables are what's singing. And
so do you have the same relationship with produce farmers as you do with the meat guys, or how tight are you with them?
But I can order, like, I know I'm gonna, like, I order like every Tuesday the cow's coming, every Sunday I place in basically a kill order and for my goats and lamb and pigs. But
you should open a restaurant called Kill Order.
I didn't know if that was a right answer, but I mean, that's for when cooks are like, I need this. It's like, yeah, that's not going to happen because things actually have to go through this process. Yeah. But with farmers, like, we don't, there's no produce company. It's just people just show up.
And you don't know what's good until it's good. Like, sometimes things show up 2 weeks later than you think, just seasonally when things are popping.
Yeah, and it's just like they show up and they're like at the back door and they're like, this is what we have. Boom, 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 boom. And that's how we base the menu. And so it's when you see something that's really gorgeous, it's like, that's going on the menu right now. And this is what we're going to do with it. And this is how it's going to be played out.
Chris, what about at Coxcomb?
I mean, we're really fortunate. I've been buying from the same farmers for 15 plus years. So like Mariquita Farms, the majority of our menu is based through them. He's based down in like Salinas area.
Are you the type of guys who put the name of the farms on the menu? Is that important to you? Like, is
no,
it,
I don't.
As long as you pay the money.
The entire menu would be filled with that because we don't have a produce company. We don't have a meat vendor. We don't have any of that. So it would just be blah, 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 blah.
I think the vegetable craze, the vegetables have always been there.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They've been there since I've been at Encanto. They've been there since Underbelly's been cranking. They've never gone away. It just became the nose-to-tail revolution became a really big thing where everybody's learning to utilize, right? It's ultimately called sustainable eating.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody talked about sustainable grown, sustainably harvested. It ultimately boils down to sustainable eating. Whether it's an animal or a piece of produce, do you use the green on the leeks or do you just use the white and throw the rest away? Yeah. Do you eat the radish greens when you get a radish? And I think that is everyday life for both of us.
But I mean, because we're already paying a higher, I know that we're paying a higher price. I'm sure you are too for things. And so like, you got to use it. Like it's not really a choice.
I'm that guy. Like I look in the compost bin.
Yeah.
I'm like, who dumped this in there? What are you doing? And I don't know if it's the same for you, Chris, but for me, perception versus reality is Chris only serves guts.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do anything else. He only knows how to cook. But I do just, my produce costs are higher than my meat costs. And I'm buying great meat, you know? And I think that people don't realize that.
We've started doing that. Like some farmers find it hard to just travel around and go from place to place to place. So we'll just say, you know what, if you grow it, we'll buy it. And that's when it hits like the peppers are, sometimes like, I can't wait for pepper season. I can't wait for it to be over.
Yeah. You know? Careful what you wish for.
Yeah. But you know, by doing that, you get to do, I started getting nervous because one of our farmers was like, by the way, satsumas will be ready in 3 weeks. And I'm like, ooh, because last year it was like 40 cases of citrus every week. And so it's like, now we'll figure it out. It's vinegars and it's, you know, the shrubs and just trying to, because we don't want farmers to have to drive around trying to figure out what to do with these things. So I'm kind of nervous right now.
Guys, this has been awesome and enlightening. But before we let you go, we're going to do our lightning round. So either or questions, and you both have to answer. Okay?
Okay.
All right. We're going to start off. Ready? Prosciutto or mortadella?
Mortadella.
Mortadella.
Why?
It's just, there's something so ethereal about the way on the palate, it's just delicious.
Creamy goodness.
That's just a rude question though.
Why is that a rude
question? That's a rude question.
Do you have children?
I do. I've never asked this question before.
Do you have children?
I do.
Which one do you like better?
I only have one.
Oh, sorry.
But like, I love prosciutto.
I do too.
Well, that's why it's a tough
one. Yeah, that is a tough one.
I like this one. Grain fed or grass fed?
Grain.
Yeah, Chris.
It just depends. It depends on the outlet. I like grass.
This is an interesting one. Pig ear or pig tail?
Tail.
Tail.
Ear.
Wow. Shepherd, this one's for you. J.J. Watt or James Harden?
J.J. Watt.
Without question.
Yeah, football's in my blood, so.
Cousin Tina, we'll give you one of yours. Niners or Giants?
Ooh.
I don't pay attention either.
Rare or medium rare?
What animal?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk steak, and then I'm curious about pork in terms of how you guys like to serve your pork. Like, obviously not a braised pork, but, you know, a chop.
Medium rare for me on steak. Mm-hmm. But it's also dependent on the cut, because some cuts need to be cooked a little bit more texturally.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like hanger steak more medium than I do medium rare.
Yeah, I'm a mid-rare guy. But on some things, I like it to be cooked up a little bit more because you get the fat starts to intertwine with the structure of the meat. And
I have a friend
starts to break down.
Who would always try to serve like a ribeye or a really giant, thick porterhouse, marbled one, rare. And at some point, it's just too rare. And the fat doesn't break down at all. And it's just like...
Ugh. It has a bad mouthfeel.
Yeah. mouthfeel. Now, what about pork? Because Americans, obviously, we're always like, oh, pork has to be cooked all the way through. That seems to have changed a lot in the last five so years, at least.
I serve pork tartare, dude. I really don't.
But he serves it medium well.
I think that it really is dependent on your animal, or you're getting it from. You have your history. You know what they're doing. But it's like certain things don't need to be hammered. Everybody wants it. I mean, pork belly, you can grill pork belly.
And it's delicious.
Really delicious.
Korean style?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm in.
I love that.
And I think pork chops, you know, when we do bacon chop, we leave the bacon cap still on it. And I really love that. But people don't understand when it's pink, they get really freaked out.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to kill me. I'm like, you're not going to get it. We have not seen trichinosis in this country for a long time.
All right. Final question. Butter or olive oil? You got to choose.
That's easy for me.
Okay.
Butter.
Cousin Tino, however, he's torn.
He's pondering.
He's like the Italian guy over here. You might really tee off your grandmother if you give the wrong answer.
I mean, I baste in olive oil. I fry in olive oil. So that's fine with me.
All right.
I do use butter, but olive oil is king in the restaurant.
I'll brown butter the hell out of anything.
Words to live by. Guys, thank you so much. Chris Cosentino and Chris Shepherd. You've been listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks. Cheers. So much. Thanks for having us.
This podcast is brought to you by executive producer Belle Cushing and project manager Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. The theme music is by Valerie and the Greedies. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Mama tried to tell me something was wrong. I wasn't listening, just playing along. When I finally got it and the truth came out, oh my mama, I sure. Come back and start.